All right, let's sure we're in fellowship. Oh, yeah, we have a meeting, don't we? Sorry. Deacon's meeting. Somebody's got some issues with regard to the alarm system. Meet in the boardroom.
And the cleaning people. And anybody who does the alarm.
Okay, anybody that's involved with our coming and going from the church, we're going to have a meeting to brief everybody on the details with regard to this in the boardroom after this class, okay? We got an upgrade on our system here, and it requires a little bit of insight. All right. Sorry about that. I am so occupied with God and His plan, I forgot it. All right, let's be sure we're in fellowship here and move on our doctrine of rebound. Rebound is taught in the Old Testament. I told you that there was two offerings that specifically dealt with this because Jews were people who came to the who were visitors and watched the priests offer up these sacrifices could come and attend as an audience. In the early tabernacle, the portable tent that could be moved around, and then later, of course, in the great temples of Israel. So the priests would go through the ritual with, I would presume, that the people who are there, they're giving explanation. So if they're offering up, you know, that the flagship offering, which is the first one in the list in Leviticus, it's called the burnt offering. Because, in this instance, whatever animal was selected within the clean animal categories, whatever animal was selected, it was to be placed on this fire, on this bronze altar, with fire under it, and it was to be consumed to ashes. When it's all said and done, it's just ashes. That's the olah karban. And that's the burnt offering. And then the other offerings, there was place for some of the meat to be eaten by the priests, indicating like we eat and drink at the Lord's table to illustrate faith, etc. So, but they had two offerings. They had two offerings that were designed to illustrate rebound. And believers could periodically bring offerings as a token of their rebound adjustment. Now, in the Old Testament, that didn't get you in fellowship. You had to confess your sins to God like any believer from the beginning all through history. They still had to rebound. Use 1 John 1:9. They just had a ritual that went with it that they could engage in, either as an individual who is bringing their own offering, etc., a sin offering, or a trespass offering. And so obviously we don't have to go through anything like that. The reality has come. This was foreshadowing the coming of the Lord, and every animal sacrifice was ever made under the law of Israel illustrated the person and work of Jesus Christ. Person mean that you had to have a qualified animal. There was animals that were disqualified because of their habits. You couldn't bring a pig. You could bring sheep. You could bring cattle. It had to be, and it's said animals that chew the cud and blah 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 blah. And it gives them the ground rules. So anyway, that's all technical. I told you that it was taught through the bronze laver, Exodus 30:18. Now, this goes back to the initial building of the tabernacle in the wilderness, where and setting up this priesthood and all the details. It's really quite phenomenal that the Jews, one, had the physical resources, had the physical talent to pull this off. This isn't some shoddy tent. We're talking linen. We're talking about gold. We're talking about silver. We're talking about elaborate, but and all the walls were made out of these planks of wood that was overlaid with gold. Somebody has to know how to do that. to overlay. The particular wood specified is a very durable wood called acacia wood. And they had to overlay this with gold. And they had these sockets, they had to set it in all the way around. Silver sockets. Really? And you got to keep that up. And you're out in the environment. It had different coverings that went over the top of this tent. The top part of it didn't have a roof like we have a roof. It had a series of coverings. If you walked inside it, all the walls you would see is gold because it's overlaid with gold. And all this isn't just to be elaborate. The whole point of it is to illustrate Bible doctrine. The wood equals the humanity of Christ. The gold, his deity. Perfect. That's the symbolism. We've been through it. We got a bunch of charts on it, show all these details. To illustrate the plan of God, and the flooring was just dirt. Obviously, they had to smooth it out real nice and pack it down. But the priest walked on dirt. This is before the temple. Obviously, with the temple, you have whatever kind of granite or tile floors that they put in that in Solomon's temple and then the other one. Now, obviously, that was a big construction project. But in the original, you still have the same basic general idea. You had the outer court. In the temple, there was an area called the Court of the Gentiles. That's visitors that came from Israel to get evangelized or to get informed. That was called the Court of the Gentiles. Then they had a court of the women and a court of the men and blah, blah, blah. But the first area you went into is called the Holy Place. And the dimensions are given in the Bible. Everything is measured in dimensions. And the different table and the three tables. Now the bronze all before the priest could enter, and priests entered daily to one, do their ritual routine. They put oil in the lamps and cleaned the debris out, the wicks, because they dropped stuff in there and it would dim the light. You think that doesn't teach a spiritual principle? It does. We are lights in the world. We are lights. That doesn't mean they recognize it. But as we go about our business in the world, out there, and apply Bible doctrine, that is a witness, and this church is a witness, to the neighborhood and beyond, even over the web. Because there's apparently there are people coming onto this on the YouTube thing. I'm sure a lot of them switch it off immediately. They don't want to hear this. But that demonstrates negative volition. They don't want to come into the light. They don't want to say, I got to hear more about that. Because if you have that mindset and you're a seeker, if you're not a seeker, forget it. And you may be one later. Of course, there's not going to be any later here. I mean, we're running out of time. Historically. Now, if you're an unbeliever, you can survive in the tribulation if you follow the rules. But you're going to learn them. And it's going to be a hardship course for every human being that has to make their way through that 7 years. And a bunch of them won't. They'll be casualties. Just be sure you're a believer and you're a casualty. An adjusted one. Jesus was a casualty for a minute. Now, this reading from Exodus 30 there, 18, you shall make a laver of bronze with its base of bronze. It'll be set on a base that has... Bronze is the metal of judgment. There were three metals in the tabernacle. Three. There are a bunch of precious stones on the breastplate of the high priest. 12 of them, to be exact. And he also had... this up here on, forgot the word for it, like in a military uniform. And these things would light up under certain circumstances and reflect certain things. And these were all precious stones set in this breastplate of the high priest. We won't go into his uniform, his special hat, headgear, and his uniform. The rest of the priests were just basic white. Indicating what? Imputed righteousness. When you're saved, God credits to your account his perfect righteousness. Doctrine of imputation or justification by faith. See, everything mirrors the doctrine we teach here. But they dealt in shadows. You know what a shadow is, don't you? It isn't the real thing. It may perfectly, with the sun in a certain angle, it may perfectly, you'd look at the shadow and say, what's that a shadow of? Oh, that's a tree. Okay. But the reality is wherever that tree is. Turn around, oh, there's the tree. So it's called a shadow, and they taught it through this ritual that was embedded and elaborate. So when he would go into the most holy place, which is phase two, the outer court is phase one. Phase two, because out in the outer court, they have this big bronze altar where they offered up all these animal sacrifices for the general public. That illustrates the cross of Christ. Inside, through the curtain for the first entrance into the holy place, that's phase two. And what are the ingredients in phase two? Over here is this golden lampstand with seven lamps that had to have oil, and every day they had to be cleaned. That's rebounds taught again. Cleaning the wicks. You are the light of the world. Israel was to be the light to the nations in their spiritual pagan darkness. They often failed in this capacity, but that was the design. And then, of course, the importance of prayer is because of the altar of incense. And the importance of Bible doctrine is the table overlaid with gold with 12 loaves of bread. Doctrines for the 12 tribes. And the priest could consume that daily at their own personal table and put fresh ones out every day. It mimics the manna that fell out of the sky during the 40 years of wilderness wanderings. I am the bread of life, Jesus said. You eat food, you keep yourself from dying. You don't, you die of emaciation, starvation. You know that, don't you? You may not eat good food. You may eat food, junk food. You may eat whatever people eat out here. But this is sound doctrine. So you consume this by faith. Faith illustrates eating and drinking. Now, you shall put it between the tent of the meeting and the altar. That's that altar on the outside. It was for public. And you shall put water in it. That's to illustrate cleansing. Aaron and his sons shall wash their hands and their feet from it. Not because they're dirty necessarily, but as a ritualistic thing. Rebound. Hands and feet. I just showed you Jesus washing the feet of the disciples thing. That's an extremity. A full bath, head to toe, that illustrates salvation. But just washing an extremity like that illustrates rebound. Okay. When they enter the tent of the meeting, they shall wash with water so that they will not die. Ooh. So this is not one you want to forget. Ooh, I forgot. I'm in a hurry. It's not important. Yeah. Play with God's plan. See what it gets you. Like when Jesus was really stern with Peter. You know what? I don't wash your feet. You have no part with me. See, sometimes you got to pull some people up short. You don't say, oh, just please do the right thing. Do it or else. That's a part of the plan of God. It's your neck. Or when they approach the altar to minister, that's the altar on the outside, by offering up in smoke. Now, smoke illustrates something. We've all been around a nice barbecue grill, and the wonderful smoke coming up, it has an appealing effect. And that's the idea. The idea is this is a soothing aroma, a pleasant aroma, a positive aroma, like cooking. It is a positive aroma that, as in the symbolism, goes up and God likes it. Because the thing that's burning is Christ on the cross, and it's another way to illustrate propitiation. Boom! That for all the sins of the world, of all humanity, of all time, Christ bore a penalty during the 3 hours of darkness. You heard it at Maranatha. Don't ever forget it. He didn't bear sins before or after the 3 hours. He tells us, when the lights came on, he said, "It is finished," from the cross. What is it? You're still on the cross. "And they shall wash their hands and their feet so they will not die. And it shall be a perpetual statute for them, for Aaron and his descendants throughout their generations." Importance of rebound. Bronze indicates judgment. The metal of judgment. Gold is deity. Silver, redemption. And I also gave you the daily trimming of the wicks on the golden lampstand. They had to do that every day because it was maintenance. "Aaron shall burn fragrant incense on it," verse 7 of that chapter. "He shall burn it every morning when he trims the lamps." 2 times a day they had to trim the lights. Lamps. Morning, evening. Because those lights burned continuously. And inside that otherwise dark place, that was the only light in there. And it was sufficient light to illustrate what? You are the people of God and you are lights in a world of darkness. And that's the spiritual darkness out there. Negative volition, human viewpoint, STA activity, and all the rest of it. And when a believer is out of fellowship or whatever, they're not reflecting light. They may think they are, but they aren't. "You are the light of the world," Jesus told his disciples. Or in a room. Back then, there was oil lamps or electricity way before that. You don't go in the room and light a lamp and then stick it under a bed. You put it up prominent where it'll shed out the most light, and so you position your lamps or your lights so you get maximum light effect. Light represents truth. Darkness represents the satanic cosmos side of things. The world's full of darkness, and we're the only lights. We're not talking about, we're talking strictly on a spiritual level. So you light your lamp by taking in doctrine and being in fellowship. And you get yourself ready when you've got to go out there in that cosmos and do what you've got to do or confront whoever you've got to deal with. You get yourself in fellowship. And keep yourself in fellowship. Whatever it is that you're up against, whatever you're dealing with, pleasant or unpleasant, you get yourself in fellowship. And you can't do that if you're worrying. You can't do that if you have some of the bad attitude about stuff. Okay? Things you have to get over as a human being. "Oh, I've been dealt bad in life, and I just don't want to get close to people because I've been dealt bad." Oh, great. Was Jesus dealt bad with? Get over it. You're going to withdraw yourself from everybody? Stay aloof? No. You'll figure out what's appropriate and what isn't. Rebound is not to be taken as a license to sin. Okay. And I'm sure there's some believers that will do that. And I'm sure I've done it. Not 24/7. "Oh, I can just rebound and I'm rolling on." I'm right. I can. Even with that bad attitude, ungodly attitude, I can determine I'm going to do something, and I'm going to name it, and I'm going to be forgiven. Now, I'm sure you've never done anything like that. But I have. And I got forgiven. Also, another principle of rebound. If you do sin, do rebound quick. Carry short accounts. You're less likely to get worse divine discipline. Maybe not any at all. God's the administrator of DD over his children. I know. Like the rest of you, I know divine discipline. I've had it. I've been hit with it. Little stuff, big stuff. Like with a child. Infraction, you should have known, you didn't. All right, this is going to be denied you or whatever is going to happen. We'll take your stupid phone away from you. 24 hours. You'll probably go crazy. Because you abused the thing. And I told you, did I not, what the ground rules were. And you decided to do different. That's where you have a strong parent that loves the kid and steps in and deals with their STA. You have full authority to do that because you are in the divine institution and you're the authority over them as long as they live under your roof. If they want to live there till they're 18, fine. These are the rules. Because if you don't have any rules, you have what you have with a lot of these kids out here today. Running amok on the streets. No wonder there's all these missing kids. Walking the malls. Some guy comes up to her and says, "Would you like a modeling job?" She should scream bloody murder and run the other direction. They don't. That's not how they recruit. Unless it's for pornography or some other stuff. What a world, huh? So this is not to be taken as a license. But this is the main objection on the part of legalists. They don't like this doctrine. Because you can just skate free. You don't have to go through anything. In the early church I was in, you were supposed to, if you did something, they never did tell you how bad it had to be. Do I have to come down the aisle every time I come to church because I sin every day? Or was it just reserved for, and everyone, I wonder what she did? Because the pastor, through his preaching, gave her a big fat guilt complex instead of telling her or him about the grace of God. Name it and move on. Yes, you're smart if you don't repeat these things, but if you do, rebound and move on. But no, I was in this environment that was ridiculous. If you were analyzing a plate of food, you wouldn't eat this. It's got too much salt, way too much. Where's the grace for believers? I told you the story. I had a friend in the church. He got his girlfriend pregnant, and they were engaged to be married. You thought that it was the end of the world, that this was the worst of time. They got married. They're still married, as far as I know. Okay. And it ticked me off, trying to get them down there crying and everything. Are you kidding me? What's wrong with people? It's like you never read the Bible, did you? You just picked out what you wanted and set up your own little deal. So, you know, people will fail on the outside. Then they get there and let's work on their guilt trend. Get them to feel really bad. Because they're not a good Christian. They got to work and rededicate to what? A constant cycle of this mess. I'm here to tell you, you know, people, I did this, but I don't care. I mean, it's done. Forgetting those things which are behind, You don't spend your life agonizing over the fact that you wrecked your nice car and totaled it, and you walked away unscathed, and it was your fault because you decided you had to run another yellow light because you saw the yellow light at the top of the hill, and you thought you could make it, and it was red by the time you hit that intersection and somebody plowed into you. That was stupid. So you could get ahead, right? So you could get one intersection ahead. Okay, you did something stupid. You got out, dust off your britches and move on. Get a fine, whatever happens. Rebound and keep moving. That some believers will so abuse the doctrine in no way distracts from its validity. Romans 6, and that, of course, are we to... What shall we say then? Are we to continue in sin so that grace may increase? Well, let me give you this little one. Every time you sin and rebound, grace abounds all the more. It abounds all the more. So we don't get from that, oh, well, I'm going to really make grace abound today. I don't think you should do that. But it does abound. It does abound. Grace abounds. Grace, and the grace God has provided, overrides the infraction you committed. Name it. Meganoito, that's his disclaimer. How shall we who died to sin still live in it? This refers to a life of 24/7 being ruled by your STA. Doesn't mean you're a bad person all the time, now does it? There's a lot of unbelievers that are nice people. They're polite. They're generous. They're hardworking. They're good family people. They'd help you out in a crisis. There are some good unbelievers. Very pleasant. But they're ruled by their STA. Their goodness is good enough to get them past you know what. What then? Shall we sin because we're not under law but under grace? Again, another verse. So, anyway, I just want you to have clarity on this. Clarity on it. No, we're not to use it that way. And if you do use it that way, you'll still be forgiven. I just have to tell you the truth. If it encourages your STA, that's not my problem. That's your problem. Oh, I can do that again. Sure you can. Rebound, you're back in fellowship. And I'll be the first to defend you. The first. You did what in yesteryear? That's dead and gone. You've been forgiven of that. It was stupid. It was sinful. It was this. It was that. I don't know. Whatever. It's over. Do not bring up people's past and try to rub it on them that are positive believers. Well, you did. Yeah. God doesn't. God doesn't. He's not even going to run us through the ringer at the Bema seat. It's about our works. Divine good, human good. It's all an objective judgment. That was done out of fellowship. It's the right thing to do. Burned up. No reward. That was done in fellowship. Boom. Here's your rewards. Package. Now, where do you learn that? This is the rules of the race that we're running. However, the believer should rebound. It's the only way to the restoration of fellowship when we sin. The only way. Here's an attitude that might exist among, and I'm sure it does exist among some Christians. Just quit doing it. Well, okay, fine. But that doesn't get you in fellowship. Rebound got you in fellowship, then you can quit doing it. Then you can quit doing it. If you keep falling back into, let's say, substance abuse, this is a very common thing out there today. It always has been. You fall back into that. Yeah, it's a good idea. You rebound. Well, I can just rebound. Yeah, you can. But it's a good idea to just ditch that habit once and for all. Get high on the truth. God's plan. However, the believer should rebound immediately upon sinning to lessen the divine discipline. Guess who didn't do that immediately? Guess who didn't do that? I don't know what he was thinking. Maybe he was thinking it was too bad of a sin. I know one thing he was thinking. He was thinking that he could cover this up. No one would know about it because it was so bad. And we just all roll on somehow. Well, it didn't work out that way. God, this Psalm 32, David gives this psalm, writes this psalm in commemoration of the sin or sins that got him under a boatload of DD. This was an otherwise virile, healthy, strong guy, a warrior. Probably didn't have a sick day in his life. And he got clobbered. The king, he got clobbered with divine wrath. He was sick. He had an extremely high fever. His body weight started dropping. And then he has this psalm, how blessed is he whose transgression is forgiven, whose sin is covered. How blessed is the man to whom the Lord does not impute iniquity. Psalm 32. And in whose spirit there is no hypocrisy. When I kept silent about my sin, silent to who? Stand up on a podium and announce to the whole nation what you did? The whole nation found out about it. He thought he could cover this whole up. Oh, we got a problem here. You got a court prophet. Oh, and God speaks to the court prophet and tells him what David did. But the news was already leaked out. His little dalliance with Bathsheba when her husband is away out in the field in combat and he's having dinner with her. And servants are running around. They see stuff. Okay, this isn't anything new. When I kept silent about my sin, my body wasted away through my groaning all day long. For day and night your hand was heavy upon me. See, he wrote there after the fact. My vitality was drained away. He had no energy. As the fever heat of summer. Selah. You know what that is? That's in the musical thing. It means pause. You don't just go right on to the next one. Absorb that. Then the key. I acknowledge my sin to you. He fessed up to God. And my iniquity I did not hide. I said, let me back up here. It's a volitional decision when you rebound. I said to myself, you talk to yourself. I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to confess that. You may not, it may be real quick for you. You automatically confess a sin. But there's this factor. I'm going to come clean with God with this. I'm going to confess it. There's rebound in the time of David. I will confess my transgression to the Lord, and you forgave the guilt of my sin. Therefore, let everyone who is godly pray to you in a time when you may be found. David ran this. He ran the table all the way to the end. Use a gambling term. He ran the table all the way to the end. He was almost dead. Sin unto death, checked out and put in the afterlife. But when he rebounded, it all turned around. He got his health back. All of his friends went into hiding. His real friends. His enemies, they're out there planning how to overthrow him. He's going to die any minute. And then he had a false friend who came in and would report to him. Well, guess what? God wiped out this organized group that we're in a specific locale, ready to pounce and take over the power of the throne. God took them all into the afterlife. That was the second time God punched a hole in the crust of the earth and sucked a bunch of people down into it. Another time was in the day of Moses, when they were challenging his leadership. And Moses had had it. There was a particular group within the whole nation, not everybody. Their names are given in the book of Numbers. And Moses, he finally confronted them all. He says, if God didn't send me, then this won't happen. I want you all to perish in a way that no one else has ever perished. I want you to free fall. And all of your possessions, I want you to free fall all the way into the underworld. In other words, you're still alive, but you're falling. Woo, pots and pans and pets and I don't want everything else. That had never been done before. People checked out, but not their whole bodies. The soul goes down. These were believers, corrupt as they could be. And it happened in the day of David too. And a whole bunch of these psalms are devoted to this episode where he fell in lust with one Bathsheba while her husband was off and started this thing going, got her pregnant, all this mess went down. And then he had to kill him to cover it up. Not personally, one-on-one. He gave orders that in a combat situation, all the men would pull back and leave Uriah the Hittite out in the open. Did you know Uriah the Hittite is mentioned in the genealogy? It hit me the other day when we read him over. He's not in the line of Christ, but he's mentioned. I look at it like this. Honorable mention, because Uriah, who was married to Bathsheba, he was a convert. He was a Hittite. So, but he was loyal to David and the whole thing, and he was betrayed in this situation, and he lost his life, but he died with honor. Uriah the Hittite. Another one for your book. Imagine having something like that happen. And then we have in conclusion, we have David, a man after God's own heart. A man who finished his course, Book of Acts. Go read it for yourself. And he committed two pretty big sins. Adultery and murder. And all it says here in this psalm is, when I acknowledged my sin, I was forgiven. So there's your doctrine, and there's the grace. Grace greater than all our sin. Thank you, Father, for the opportunity. May God, the Holy Spirit, enlighten us in Christ's name. Amen.